Hey, everybody, coming at you for a quick announcement. We wanted to share some good news that hopefully you've seen already around, but we have a Dune TV show coming out.
Well, not us, but there is a Dune TV show coming out.
The Royal We. Yes, Dune Prophecy is getting closer. The release date is set for sometime in November, and we are encroaching upon that date. So we are excited to announce that we are going to be extending our coverage to that TV show.
Yep. We're not going to be doing it like our regular podcast where we're going minute by minute because we want to maintain some degree of sanity throughout all of this. But we will be doing an episode of the Dune Minute podcast or special episodes of the Dune Minute podcast in conjunction with the episodes coming out each week.
Yep.
We don't quite know yet what day we're going to be releasing those podcasts, but we will be blasting our socials and everything with more information as they're coming out. So keep an eye on your feeds, because coming up, you might be getting two episodes on one day a week.
That's right. Oh, just what the people want. More
more Dune.
All right, cool. We'll see y'all later.
Yep. See ya.
Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back. John, we made it to Friday.
It is Friday.
Congratulations.
Well, some of us made it to Friday. Duncan didn't make it to Friday.
Well, most of us.
This Duncan didn't make it to Friday.
Most of us made it to Friday. So we are here to talk about minute 114 through 115.
Paul turning an engine on.
Yeah, that's really, we're going to be in largely one location this whole minute. So
almost entirely one location, yeah. And that is the cockpit of this ornithopter.
Yeah.
So yesterday I said that I had some stuff from Art and Soul of Dune.
Go for it.
Art and Soul of Dune, not sponsored.
Heavily referenced, not sponsored.
Heavily referenced, yes. Incredibly heavily referenced, not sponsored, does actually give us a name for this ornithopter.
Oh, cool.
This ornithopter is Orny 2.
What?
Yep.
Orny 2?
O-R-N-I space number 2.
Okay.
That's what they call it.
That's fun.
Says, in general, the stealthy Fremen do not use ornithopters, but fortunately they keep an old aircraft for emergencies, which comes into use when Paul and Jessica flee the Sardaukar attack. The design of this model differed from the Atreides ornithopter and was made to resemble a small bush exploration aircraft rather than a military vehicle. Came up with the escape ornithopter designed very quickly because we had figured out the original one, according to one of the production designers. It was a matter of redesigning the shell. The concept stayed the same. Denis envisioned it as an antique vehicle that had not been used in ages. We see that very clearly in the movie.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as you were talking, I just did a quick Google search for a particular airplane that I've seen.
Yeah.
It is a Piper Super Cub.
Okay.
And it is like this very, very stereotypical bush plane.
Yeah.
That people fly. And yeah, I can see the resemblance. That's really cool. Just short, stubby, just ready to take off. And not that this super applies to ornithopters, but take off and landing in like super short areas.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like
get into places that others can't.
It needs a 50-foot runway.
Yeah. Sometimes less. Have you ever seen those like the competitions for shortest takeoff and landings that the bush pilots do?
Yes.
They're getting it down to like 15, 20 feet. It's crazy.
It's fucking nuts. So a couple things about Orny 2.
Yeah.
First and foremost, as Art and Soul of Dune has said, it's old as shit. it definitely looks like it's been sitting there for a while.
Yeah.
Hasn't been used or anything. So we start the scene off with Paul and Jessica running across this open. I mean, it's just a giant open, like, circular helipad
landing zone
yeah, whatever. Kind of space. Paul and Jessica are sprinting across that to get to the ornithopter. Mm-hmm. They get into it. It's got, like, these kind of rickety doors and stuff. And then they get inside it, and surprise, we're in Mexico because everything is sepia tone from the yellow windows in this cabin.
Yeah, that's right.
When I was watching it, I was like, if you could turn Johnny Depp's glasses from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas into an ornithopter,
oh yeah,
that's what this yeah, is.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just that yellow tinted,
sure,
you know, glass or whatever, which I'm sure like serves an actual purpose with, you know, reducing the harshness of the sun's reflection off of sand or whatever, or maybe yeah, they just wanted to make it
well
more reminiscent of like that bush plane aesthetic or whatever.
You just made me think, like, do you remember that like short spell, which I'm gonna give a little bit of our backstory, our joined backstory, when we worked at the Apple store, where...
Wow, you're doxing me right now?
I'm not doxing you, Jesus Christ.
I'm giving you shit.
There was a brief spell when we worked at the Apple store where a handful of the folks that worked there with us wore the yellow glasses, the yellow computer glasses.
Yes. I know exactly two people mm-hmm. in particular that you're referencing.
Yep. I don't know. It just reminded me of that and gave me a good chuckle because that was like a 6 month period.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I internally in my head when I was taking my notes last night, I was like the Fear and Loathing ornithopter.
Yep. That's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they climb inside and Paul starts his pre-flight check startup routine.
Yep.
I have to imagine that there's more to this startup procedure than what's shown and what is, you know, probably dictated by the FAA.
Yeah.
Which is the, of course, the Arakeen Federal Aviation Administration. but given the time crunch that they're under is probably excused.
Sure. Sure.
We never really see that in movies, like proper pre-flight checks and startup procedures. Like with stuff like this, they just get in, hit the go button and fly.
I don't know. Airplane did it pretty well.
Well, okay. Yeah. Airplane did it well as a joke. They did it to say, hey, every other movie's wrong.
Oh, God. I haven't watched Airplane in a minute.
I would say most of it still holds up.
Yeah.
No, but I don't know. It's just, there's steps to this whole thing. Sure. It's kind of the same thing that we never see people say goodbye on television or like on the phone in movies and stuff. Like rarely do we see people like end an actual conversation. They just get done with what they're talking about and hang up.
Yeah.
Because
you don't do that.
No, I say goodbye to people. Do you just hang up on people after you're done saying what you need to say?
No, it's like, all right, cool. Bye.
Well, yeah, that's still a sign off in some respect, I guess.
Hey, what time are you going to be here? 2:30. Click.
Yeah. Like that's the kind of stuff we get in a lot of TV and movies is like that level of interaction because the hellos and goodbyes, they don't advance the plot. It takes up time and it's sure. just not needed. So that's the kind of thing that we mostly see with like aircraft startup. They just hop in.
Push the button,
turn the key, whatever it is, and yeah. then just go. When in reality, it's like it's a whole process that you have to go through.
Yeah, but also to your
it's
point.
It's not exactly compelling TV.
They're also being chased down by starter car.
Too, yeah, so. Yeah. So like I said, this can probably be excused.
One thing that, you know, I did notice as well in relation to this, you know, old junker plane that's been sitting for a long time kind of mm-hmm. thing. So we see Jessica begin to put on like her seatbelt.
Yeah.
And it looks old shitty seatbelt. Like it's
like the cross, like double crossbody harness.
Like the double crossbody. It's got the like the actual
buckles
and shit.
What do they call those? A 4-point harness or a five point harness.
Okay. Yeah. Cause you have inside the groin, over one shoulder, over another, over one hip, over the other.
Okay.
Hip.
Gotcha. So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely antiquated. I noticed it. This is jumping ahead just a smidge.
Yeah. I mean, spoilers for this minute. The whole minute is Paul turning on the ornithopter.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we're just going to kind of be bouncing around this for however many minutes we decide to talk about it.
Hey, I need to be a plain nerd for a second.
We're going to be stretching this minute for this episode of the podcast out as much as we can before we start talking in circles.
Right. So when... In the startup sequence, Paul like extends the wings out for takeoff, kind of towards the end of it.
Yeah,
we see the wings; they don't move in the same cadence. Like one wing, in particular, is slower than the rest of them.
Yeah,
to extend.
Well, those heart mollusks probably haven't been doing a lot.
Waking up from hibernation or whatever.
Yeah.
So
shit.
You know that, okay, that does put a different spin on it when you consider, like, if you were to like believe that is canon in this movie.
It's not because this ornithopter is like sputtering fucking smoke and shit yeah. out of it, and like at one point when Paul's like going to hit the ignition, like you hear it do the rah, 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 rah,
yeah,
which, that's not how it would work with heart mollusks, because it would just be a zap. Bzz.
Well, they do have jet engines in conjunction with the mollusks.
Okay. So
that could be the part, like the turbine spinning up for those.
Maybe.
But that puts a whole spin on this that I didn't consider.
I want to ask them, like, hey, did you guys consider the heart mollusks?
Oh, I know. That would be fun. That would be real fun.
Oh, did you consider the sligs?
Did they consider the lobster? It's my question. So they get the doors shut. As we've said before, you can tell it's old just by the design, the wear, and everything's moving super slow on this.
It's almost rusty looking. Like, yeah, it's a little rust bucket, yeah, kind of.
In the books, I don't have this in my book notes section, so I'm cool with saying this right now, but Paul and Jessica note how much dust is on everything. When they get to this ornithopter, so they say, like, okay, this thing's been sitting for a long fucking time here.
Gotta go out and fucking prime the
little red
dot. Flush the carburetor out on this bitch.
So Paul's doing his thing with getting the ornithopter to start up. What is Jessica doing this whole time? She's still panicking. Quietly, she's in a very like not over the top method or mode of panic at this moment, but her eyes are glued to the stairs that they just came up to.
Well, yeah,
she's just keeping an eye out for any kind of sort.
In fairness, Paul's busy with all the pre-flight shit, trying to get mm-hmm. this thing actually going.
Yeah,
someone's got to watch out for the starter car. So I feel like, not to our own fault, but we do kind of harp on Jessica for panicking a lot.
Well, she's always justified in it. It's just,
yeah,
that, and I'm not saying she shouldn't be panicking. I'm just saying that she panics a lot. That is a lot of Jessica's scenes.
A lot of her part one scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And once she drinks some Kool-Aid, it's a different story.
So
she gets Baja blasted the fuck up.
So the engines finally kick in and the wings start to flap and they lift off from this like landing zone area that we see them in.
Yep.
Fun fact, this landing zone is one of the areas in Microsoft Flight Simulator that you do quick takeoffs and landings from. So they built this scene out inside that game. And when you're doing the ornithopter missions, you can land and take off from this area. So it's pretty fun.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And they just recently added some Dune 2 locations too. So that will be fun. I have not checked those out yet.
Well, fucking do it and then give us a report.
I will. Paul and Jessica get the hell out of there.
Yep.
They get out of there so fast. the camera cuts to like a very wide shot of the desert.
And we see this little ornithopter kind of taking off. This one definitely looks more dragonfly-ish than...
Yeah.
I mean, the other ones definitely did too, but this one's...
So much more evocative of the dragonfly, just with the rounded kind of bulbous head.
The...
yellow eyes.
Yep.
So as the camera is panning, following them as you know they make their way out into the desert, it pans behind what is a Sardaukar. Looks like a Sardaukar soldier watching them take off from from the testing station, and that is exactly where our minute ends.
That shot is a very Star Wars shot to me when I saw it.
Yeah.
Not that it's a bad thing, but the way that it's framed and everything just evoked a lot of like early Star Wars cinematography to me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm trying to think of like, there's a number of like almost exact scenes that we see like that. Like,
yeah.
Someone watching another ship take off and you know, fly off. And I guess all we would have needed was a left to right wipe transition to make this complete.
or like a bottom to top wipe or whatever. No, I just thought it was cool.
We can do a full from the center out circle wipe.
Yep. Get a little John Williams like sizzler, whatever.
Sure. Why not? all right, cool. Well, yeah, that's where the minute ends. Any other minute notes?
No.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is a minute of Paul turning on an ornithopter and waking up some sleepy heart mollusks.
Yep. Cool. Well, I'll dive in.
I got a job to do.
Yeah. Well, this one is, they pulled him out of retirement for one last job.
I'm too old for this shit. One of the heart mollusks is just sitting there fucking smoking menthols. Ah.
Hell yeah.
I thought it was out. They pull me back in.
All right, cool. Here are some notes from the book. And these are going to be pretty vague just because, again, this is not something that...
this whole really, week's worth of episodes was three paragraphs.
Well, I mean, we get this... We definitely do get this scene in the books. It's mostly the same too. So Paul and Jessica make their way to the ornithopter. The thing that is different is that they have a lot more like back and forth dialogue between the two of them as the ornithopter is starting up. And they're just discussing like where to go, when, you know, how do we get to the storm? Where is the storm? All that kind of stuff. So they're talking about logistics.
Yeah.
Really. One thing that I wanted to note in this goes back to something I think we talked about on Monday this week, where I said, oh, fuck, what did we say?
We said a lot of things on Monday. So
you were talking about how Paul had seen this.
When we first meet Duncan in the movie, Paul confesses to him that he had a vision of Duncan's death.
Right.
And then what I was saying on Monday was, do you think this is Paul trying to change the future from the vision that he saw?
Right. So, and I, on Monday I said, no, but
yeah.
And here's the reason why.
Okay. Man, you're really making the people wait for this one.
So Paul's prescience visions, they're failing him at this moment. And this is a lot of the last bit of this chapter. It talks about this. He's confused as fuck right now.
Yeah.
Because he has been relying so much on his prescience since the tent scene where it really just like flooded over him
when he was just fucking mathing out.
Yeah.
He was like, his mom was too fucking stupid to understand.
He was knee deep looking
this dumb bitch
looking into the future. And really since then he has been relying on that for him to know what to do next.
Okay.
So here we encounter one of the first like visible flaws in Paul's prescience. It's not perfect. We've talked about this before. Like things can change.
He's not a perfect person.
No, I know that's a song reference. I'm not going to,
you're not going to indulge.
I'm not going to indulge you.
Fuck you. Fuck you. You son of a bitch.
Mainly because
I set you up so well.
Mainly because I don't remember the lyrics after that. I know it's... it's the Hoobastank.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I was going to say, our friend Sam would be so upset with you.
It's Hoobastank, the reason.
Yes.
Okay, I just don't remember the lyrics. I'm sorry.
God damn it.
So, Paul is... He describes what's been going on since the attack by the Sardaukar in the bunker, the testing station, up until this point where he is taking off as kind of a dead spot.
Yeah.
In his prescience. He can't see what is about to happen. He knows that there are ways through it. Some of the ways he dies, some of the ways he doesn't die. What he literally describes it as, he says he views himself as going over the hill into a valley where he's lost sight of himself.
Yeah.
And he knows that there are paths out of that valley, some of which Paul Atreides lives, some of which Paul Atreides dies.
So he's become over reliant on his own prescience and no longer can rely on his own instincts at this point effectively.
Yep. And when he's thinking about this, he recites a Bene Gesserit like kind of axiom. I don't have it written down here, so I may butcher it just a little bit, but it goes something like, when you rely on your eyes, your other senses worsen or weaken, maybe it says.
Yeah.
And he makes a mental note. He's like, do not fall into this trap again. He's relied too much on his prescience, and his objectivity maybe is a good way of describing it has failed.
His instincts are failing him.
Yeah.
So, everything that he's learned growing up from Gurney and from Duncan and from Thufir, you know, all of that other training has just kind of been cast to the wayside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for the ability to, you know, pilot this ornithopter, which, I mean, in fairness, the control, just like we talked about with Duncan taking the Harkonnen ornithopter, it's probably not exactly the same, but close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ornithopter seemed like a technology that was probably, quote unquote, perfected thousands of years ago or however long they've been around. So the design's probably not changed.
Yeah.
But this kind of trap that Paul has found himself in becomes kind of a really big theme for him as the story of Paul Atreides continues. He becomes very wary of using his prescient abilities too much.
Yeah.
And only using them at certain times. And we see a bunch of consequences of him using it too much. And this is just kind of the beginning of that, that part of the story. So we don't get that in the movies. At least right now.
We get a good bit of it in part two. But that's also drinking the water of life and truly becoming Kwisatz Haderach at that point, which we're a while from that. Yeah. So let's get through this sandstorm first.
Yeah, exactly. They have 5,000 meters they need to climb.
Whew. Shit.
All right, cool. Well, what would you say you rate this week, man?
Oof. I mean, I've got to give this week at least a 9, man. Duncan, Idaho, tearing it up. What a way to go out for now.
Yeah. I mean, one of the best characters in this whole movie.
Yeah.
Just a very fitting temporary end.
Yep.
For Duncan, Idaho.
I do kind of, so something from Art and Soul, unrelated to this week's scene, but there was an entirely different opening to the movie that was filmed.
Oh yeah.
That was very Duncan, Idaho heavy. And I kind of wish that we had elements of that as well. Just because I fucking love Duncan, Idaho, and I love Jason Momoa. So like to have had more of him in the movie would have been cool.
Okay.
But what a way to send him out.
Yeah. I'm going to be in the neighborhood with you. I'm going to go up to 8 on this one. Great week. I mean, love a good fight scene. Love a good fight scene with Duncan Idaho. The choreography is just awesome, as it has been this entire movie. It sticks pretty faithfully to the books, the bits that we see.
But also takes creative liberties to extend beyond the books way better than what the books provide us.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish that there would have been a continuation of the ordeal that Paul's going through in this, like, because we see like a very clear line drawn, like he trips out in the desert.
Yep.
He has his Burning Man moment, and then he's like fine after that.
Yeah.
He's a little weird when he's talking to Kynes last week.
Yeah, I was going
to
say he's still like a little.
Yeah.
But almost. I'm kind of Jesus.
We get it a little bit last week, but like in this set of minutes, like there could have been an important like aftermath that we saw portrayed. The stuff that I just talked about, like with the prescience being blind at this moment.
Sure. But I also think seeing Duncan sacrifice himself kind of sucks Paul out of that. Like
could have been. Yeah.
Ethereal plane. Yeah.
Yeah.
For a moment and like really just fucking grounds him back in reality.
Yeah. Could be. It's also not the story that they meant to tell right now.
Sure.
They were telling the ending of Duncan in this week pretty much. So the focus was on that. So I understand, but
also we got to see that one Fremen do the sick ass kickflip off the wall.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
Fucking cool too.
So yeah, overall great. We had
the fucking WWE SummerSlam choke slam of death. We had the kickflip off the wall. We had the fucking bug again. We had Duncan Idaho kicking ass.
Yeah, great week of minutes. So let's get back next week and figure out where they're flying to.
Yeah, all Kynes told them was head south. So we got to figure that out.
Cool.
As always, you can find us online. We are on Instagram at the Dune Minute. You can find us on Twitter at Dune Minute or email duneminute@gmail.com. Don't forget to also rate, comment, and share the show with your friends. If you're on Apple Podcasts, just drop a rating and some comments. It'll help us kind of expand our audience a little bit. Mm-hmm. We'll be back on Monday with another week of the Dune Minute. All right. See you later.
See you then.